Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 15, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have two guests, one returning and one new.
I'm Tom Parham. I'm a screenwriter and college professor.
I'm Rebecca Safier. I'm an actor and occasional blurry person in the background of stuff you watch.
All right, and this week with the news, again, because it's the summer, we don't have as much news as normal, but what we do have is that apparently there's a rumor of Glee movies. They just signed... I'm watching Tom beat himself upside the head. They just signed all the actors for a 3-movie contract as part of their Glee contract. So apparently they are going to do Glee movies. Nothing's been confirmed. No scripts have been written. They're not sure exactly what they want to do, but they felt the need to sign up all the actors.
Okay, if Brad Falchuk does not write all 3 movies, there's no way on God's earth I will go see any of those.
Well, I think it's crazy to do a movie while your show is on the air, because why would I pay money when I can watch it on television unless it's something...
Like X-Files?
Well, X-Files, they actually sort of told a part more of the story.
Which made no sense.
But in theory, I could see what they would do with the X-Files. Like, the theory behind that made sense. For Glee, though, I'm assuming for the movie, all you're going to do is they're going to sing a bunch of songs.
Hey, Fox is going to milk this cash cow till her teats bleed, and I don't blame them, because I think the shelf life...
is very short.
I think the shelf life of this show is very short, and if they didn't already jump the shark with the Madonna episode, I expect some water skis next season.
All right.
Well, also, didn't Disney get away with it with Hannah Montana and other things? It seems to be more the target audience of the Glee people that are going to go pay for tickets for the children.
It's all about money.
Yeah. All right, and the next piece of news I have is that Secret Diaries of a Call Girl. I don't know if any of you guys watch it. I only watched it for Billy Piper.
I saw the pilot.
I saw the first 2 seasons, but basically it was a BBC show, and then it got bought out by Showtime. Thank you. And so it's been on Showtime ever since, and Showtime has said that season 4 will be the last season, which they're going to shoot in August, and that's going to be the end. And then I realized I haven't watched season 3, so I got to go watch season 3. I actually like it. It's fun. It's a fun show. And the next piece of news I have is that Neil Patrick Harris is going to get a Hollywood star on the Walk of Fame.
Yay. Did see that, yes.
Yes, yes. So I have no idea where they are going to put it, but once I find out, I'll be sure to go over there and step on it a couple of times just to be like, I've stepped over his star.
Didn't he say he was getting one with the same time as the Muppets?
Yes. He and the Muppets are getting stars together.
Sweet.
And the last thing that I have is No Ordinary Family, the pilot that's going to be on ABC. We all just watched the trailer, and I'm kind of interested in what you guys think.
Fantastic Four meets Heroes.
Does that mean you're going to watch it?
Oh, yeah. I love the cast. I mean, Chiklis and Benz.
Well, I mean, yeah, I love both of them.
So I just hope it's got better writers than Heroes.
From the pilot, it looks like it's a different kind of show. It looks like it's going to be funny, which I think is a good move.
People with superpowers having fun with them? Crazy idea, Olivia.
Unlike Heroes, where there's angst. Oh my god, I have these powers. What am I going to do?
So more like The Incredibles.
Woe exactly. Woe is me with my super abilities. I don't want to be the cheerleader who can't die.
And whatever. The Incredibles was the better Fantastic Four movie than either of Fox's.
Right, exactly. And you guys have any news?
I have a couple of items. Number one, Andy Whitfield, star of Spartacus, Blood and Sand. Blood and Fire, thinking Klingon, is in remission from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and will be at Comic-Con.
Yay!
And they plan to start filming the prequel series with John Hannah and Lucy Lawless in August, and then I guess continue from that straight into season 2.
Where everyone who was in the prequel will be dead. I have to say that for a first season, Spartacus knocked it out of the park.
Yes, they did. A welcome surprise.
Yes, I was especially how they started. You know, when the series started off, I thought it was just going to be cheesy fun. By about halfway through, I then went, oh yeah, the creator of this show used to work on Buffy. You know, and then people just started dropping dead left and right.
Oh yeah.
And it was heartbreaking, yet fantastic at the same time. There was this, there's a scene in the finale, because the finale is called Kill Them All.
Kill Them All. They pretty much do.
Yes, and where they literally kill so many people. There was this part where there's one character that I really didn't want to die, and I was just sitting there rocking in my chair going, don't die, don't die, don't die.
Which is...
I don't want to say, because, though technically the show's aired, so it's not a spoiler anymore, but it was Doctori. Like, there's the scene where Doctori is, like, wandering in the dark looking for what's that guy's name? The limp.
Oh, I don't think he's dead.
Oh, I know he's not. Okay. But when the scene is, he's wandering through this dark room and he's hunting for the guy that's a cripple, and I can't think of that man's name right now.
Not Adger or something.
Something like that.
Something like that.
And he's looking for him, and that guy can't take Doctori in a fight, but he's really stealthy and really creepy. Well, not creepy, but like he's sneaky.
Sneaky.
And so I was like, in the dark, get him from behind, you could totally, you know, kill him. So I was just rocking in my chair going, no, Doctori, get out of there, get out of there. Because they had already killed like four or five main characters at this point. And you're just like, anybody is game. And that's what I think. They did a really good job of establishing the stakes of that show.
Yes,
and letting you know that literally anyone could die. Except for probably Spartacus.
Yeah, well, we know how...
Well, we know how
what the series finale is.
Yes, we know how that ends. It doesn't end well for him. But we know that until that happens, he's pretty much safe. But they really showed that nobody else is. People just were just... It was awful. There's a lot of blood on that finale. So, and unusual people... killed people too in that finale. You did not see it coming. It was great. Anyway.
And the other thing, I went to Hero Complex Film Festival last weekend, sponsored by the LA Times, and Chris Nolan did an interview, a Q&A with Jeff Boucher in between Insomnia and The Dark Knight, and he was asked about Superman, the next Superman movie, which he is producing, and all he would say is that...
it's not that goofy guy that's going to be back, right?
Well, they didn't talk about any specifics, but I can't think of the guy's name, the comic book writer who...
I'm not going to be any help to you.
Blade, the guy who wrote and directed the last couple of Blade movies. Anyway, the pitch was a great idea, a new take on the Man of Steel nobody had suggested before, and the reason he signed on to produce is he wanted to make sure that that take makes it to the big screen.
All right. Well, so. As long as they cast Superman better. I mean, I swear the last one, I saw the shot of the guy, and I was like, he's not Superman. Like, just look at...
Brandon Ralph?
Yeah. I looked at the poster with him on it, and I was like, he's not Superman. There was just something about him that just wasn't Superman. And then once I saw him in action, because I got dragged to that movie against my will, and once I saw the movie, I was like, no, he's really not Superman. So...
I didn't mind him. I just didn't like the plot. It was
the same plot that we've seen.
It wasn't a sequel. It was a requel.
Right.
It was all the same story beats as Superman 1.
But you have... Did you really buy him as Superman? Really?
I thought he was fine.
No.
Now, I had a... Kate Bosworth, I hated as Lois Lane.
Just well, okay. I hated her as Lois Lane, and I didn't buy... Who the heck was Lex Luthor? I forgot.
Kevin Spacey.
I didn't buy him as Lex Luthor.
I think Parker Posey would have made a better Lois Lane, but because she's older than Ralph, heaven forfend, we have a female lead who's slightly older than the male lead in a movie these days.
Well, and then they made Superman too young, too.
Well, they made him a deadbeat dad. Come on, seriously?
They made him a deadbeat dad who looked like he was 19. So, first of all, I didn't believe that they could have met each other and they had a kid. Who's that old? And even though the kid was only like 5, I was like... He looks like he's 20. How could he have had, you know, just like all the story beats of that story just didn't make sense. Okay, I'm off track. News, do you have any news, Rebecca?
I don't believe I do.
All right, well then we will break into the shows. This week we had the season 3 premiere of True Blood.
Yeah.
And so that is the beginning of the summer. You know, that is, once HBO unleashes their summer shows, it becomes a deluge of other shows. So what'd you think?
Loved it.
That's just it. That's it.
No, right? It's just everything I wanted it to be. Just potential for interesting storylines. The werewolves are now in play.
Oh yes. Is that this? I was going to ask you, what's your favorite? Because they had like they introduced about 3 or 4 different storylines. So what's your favorite that they've shown?
I kind of want to see what's going on with what's going to happen with Eric and Sookie, because I've heard spoilers from the novels, which I know they're only using the novels as a jumping off
point. Have you read the novels?
No, I haven't yet.
I have them. You can borrow them if you would like.
I kind of want to be surprised with the show.
They're not doing... I know they're different. Yeah, the only thing that really follows is the first book follows first season pretty tightly. After that, it's totally off book. So... though I will warn you, the books are way better than the series.
Well, the books are always better. You know Charlaine Harris is happy because those books are selling.
Yeah.
I mean, and she's up to, what, 9 now?
Yeah, and they're good. So.
So.
I do have to say that I did see a casting notice fairly recently for something coming up on
Shira. That's a spoiler.
I won't say exactly, but it's the fact that my friends who have read the books... It was a very unique description. And so my friend, and I said it to people, and my friends who've read the books are like, oh, I know what that is. So something coming up, but
okay,
from the book, I guess.
Well, I mean, they like last season, remember the whole storyline in the hotel with Godric and the big meeting and all that stuff? That was in the books, but that was like a book by itself. That was, I can't remember which book that was.
Oh, they stole from a book that wasn't number 2?
No, I don't think that was number 2. I think that was like book 4 or 5 or something. Because, and the conference in the hotel was much bigger. It was a conference of all the vampires in the United States all came together to meet at this conference in the hotel. And
I wouldn't be surprised if we see that version eventually.
Well, I mean, but they kind of did it at the hotel in season 2. Like, what happens... Basically, the big explosion. That's what happens at the big conference, and then that and the bellboy that Sookie met, that was in the
book. That was in there too.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And so all, and then her and the bellboy team up to do a rescue to save all the people who were buried in the explosion and stuff. Mm. So all that was in the book, and they took some of the interesting bits, which which made it really good. But what I was going to say is when I watched the premiere of season 3, of course I'm excited about Eric because Eric is my favorite character. And as much as I don't like Bill in the books, I have to say that the show has made him at least interesting.
Is he dull in the books?
Oh my God. He actually is so dull in the books, he disappears by book 2.
I forgot a bit of news. Alexander Sarsgaard has signed to be in Battleship to play Taylor Kitsch's brother.
I don't know what you just said. That sounded like a different language.
Alexander's.
I know who you're. I know who that is.
Battleship, the motion picture.
I don't know what Battleship. What are you?
Battleship, the board game. Come on.
Are you serious?
You didn't know that? Board game. It's the latest source.
Well, I know the board game. The board game. You sunk my Battleship. Yeah, I played that when I was a kid. They're making that into a movie. That sounds stupid.
It's got a space element, evidently, like an alien armada. But Taylor Kitsch from Friday Night Lights and X-Men Origins Wolverine is signed to play the lead, but they just cast Alexander Sarsgaard from True Blood to play his brother.
Because they look alike? They don't look alike.
I don't know. Two hot white dudes. I don't know.
They are both hot, but that's about all they have in common. But anyway, back to True Blood. What I was going to say is Eric is my favorite character. And I'm glad now, because in season 1, what I thought the weakness of season 1 was it didn't have Eric. I was like, when is Eric going to show up?
Up toward the end of season 1?
He shows up at the very end. Towards the end, and he has like a couple of minutes, but he doesn't really have much of a part. And then in season 2, they make him a much bigger character. In season 3, he's actually at the front of the poster now.
And Pam is now a series lead instead of just a recurring.
Well, Pam, they need to make her buck, because in the books, she is awesome. And I'm waiting for her to be awesome on
the
show.
I think they're working up to some awesomeness for her.
So I'm excited about that. I really do like Pam. The thing that actually I found disappointing in the premiere was Sookie's storyline, which was the damsel in distress going, oh my God, someone stole my boyfriend. I'm like, really? That's all? You're technically the lead of this show, and that's all you have to say? And she just went from person to person to person to person going, oh my God, someone stole my boyfriend. And everybody went, shut up, we don't care. Your boyfriend's a vampire, who cares?
That seems more like a Bella move than a Sookie move.
Right, and that's my thing is I don't need a helpless heroine in this series. And what's so frustrating is in the book, she is awesome. She is a shotgun wielding, you know, she's really, really cool. And in the show, she's always waiting for one of the vampires to save her. And that gets old really fast. I mean, if she has abilities, she has powers, and she rarely uses them because she's like, oh my God, my powers make me a freak.
That reminds me, they really haven't done much with her using her powers.
And her source, the source of, because I've read the books, of course, I know the source of her powers.
You know the answer to Marianne's, what are you?
Yes, I do. And it's awesome. And I'm like, come on. Even though we don't find out until like book 7 or 8.
Wow, that's a couple seasons.
Yeah, we don't find out until book 7 or 8 what her actual source of her powers. But there's been little clues that little things they've dropped that if anybody's read the books, go, oh, I know what that is. You know, so that's pretty cool.
I didn't like what they did with Hoyt. Just kind of making him kind of a wuss again. I mean, kind of the opposite problem is Sookie. It's like, oh, my girlfriend's gone all crazy.
Blah, well, the girlfriend, I have to say, had me rolling because she kills a guy.
It doesn't know what to do with the body.
Doesn't know what to do with the body. I'm like, how intelligent do you have to be? Freaking take it out to the back and bury it. Don't leave it in the house and let it smell up your house. She just leaves it in the house.
I love Pam's response to her. It's like, I don't, you know, you're beneath me. Get out of my way.
Oh my God. I was just like, take the body out back and bury it.
Somebody needs to give her the book Vampires for Dummies.
<I know. laughs> She's the dumbest. She's like a teenage vampire who has no idea what she's doing. And not her fault. Bill is the one that should be teaching her. Mm-hmm. But Bill is mad that he has her latched onto him, so he's ignoring her. So he hasn't really taught her anything. And so she's a freaking idiot, and it's good comedy relief.
It's good comic relief.
Yeah, so I don't mind that. But I think Suki's storyline is definitely the weakest. I do like that the werewolves have shown up, and I think that's gonna be really cool. It's taken forever for them to show up, and I'm like, thank God.
Well, do they show up earlier in the books?
In the books, yeah, I'm pretty sure they do.
It's funny that
I got to go back and read.
Somebody on Facebook was trying to say, "Oh, it sounds like a grown-up version of Twilight," and I'm like, "No, Twilight is like the young adult version of everything else."
Right.
This is more like the Dark Shadows with sex.
First of all, this series has been out before Twilight, so don't get it twisted. All right, let's not turn into Twilight bashing.
It's too easy.
I know. That's like cheating.
The Sam storyline, you just know that, again, you know the spoilers, but...
I don't actually know the spoilers.
For Sam's story?
I don't know. I try to avoid spoilers for shows I really like.
No, I'm talking about... It's in the...
Actually, it's not in the book.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a new... Every once in a while, the Lafayette storyline, everything that happens in Lafayette... Brand new because he dies in the first book.
You know who they cast to play his mom, don't you?
No.
Alfre Woodard. That's spoiler. It's been announced.
It's still a spoiler. We have not seen it on screen.
Oh, good Lord, woman.
I don't want any spoilers. Thank you. Thank you.
But I love the Lafayette storyline. Although that is awesome. I didn't buy the Tara.
Yeah, Tara being suicidal.
She's always been problematic because, I don't know, it's like, girl, just... hold on to a guy.
And my thing is if you can't hold on to a guy, suck it up. You know what I'm like? But I mean, I get it. He just died and she's all depressed and sad. I get that.
So, eggs. Give her some bacon or something.
Okay. That was bad. That was bad fun. So I like the show. I like where I'm excited about the new season. I like where it's going.
I love that they're using real wolves instead of bad special effects.
That's true. They just gave them glowing eyes.
Yeah, but the wolves are. I mean,
they look scary.
Did you see the little thing afterwards where they talked about training the wolves and introducing the wolves to the cast? It did like a real quick behind the scenes.
No, I didn't.
But they're beautiful animals. I mean, they just
Well, I have to say, they look scary to me, and if I ran into the woods, and there's like 10 of them.
Do you know how they do that? They basically put food in front of them and take it away, and they get the they get the dog response. Why are you messing with my food?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't want to be that guy taking the food away from the wolves. But, all right, so, yes, excited about the new season of True Blood. Let's go on to Lie to Me.
I'd never seen it before, so I enjoyed it. I just felt a little lost because it felt kind of like an arc story and you don't know.
It actually isn't an arc, though the episodes you watched would make it seem that way because it was all flashback.
Right, right.
But generally speaking, it's not an arc show. So, have you seen?
I actually haven't, and I thought about watching this week's, and I caught the very end of it. And I was like, oh, maybe this wouldn't be a good one to jump into, because when I saw how it was sort of ending, I was like, this doesn't feel like it's something I can just jump into today.
So, yeah. I can't think...
Cal Lightman.
The woman who played Lindsay on The Practice. Well, I can't think of the actress's name.
I have no idea who you're talking about, because I didn't watch The Practice.
Dark brown hair.
Oh, Torres.
The one who... The psychiatrist, or...
No, oh, that's Jillian Foster is her character's name.
She's a regular on the show, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because it was talking about this dark secret between her and...
Well, it wasn't really a dark secret exactly, because that was the whole thing, is when you start watching the show, the premise is that Foster and Lightman being Tim Roth, are best friends. They've known each other for about... They made you think it was 10 years, but now they're saying 7. So you're like, all right, whatever. And they started this company together. The Lightman Foundation, they started it together. They're partners and they're best friends.
And they consult for the FBI.
And they consult for the FBI, they consult for the White House, they consult for whoever. And their fee is like really high. They're super top end. They have all the top equipment. But the thing is that both of their marriages broke up. Lightman's ex-wife pretty much blamed his relationship with Foster as part of the reason why she broke up with him, because he tells Foster stuff he doesn't tell her, and she felt all jealous, and also he would read her all the time and know when she was lying, and she's like, you can't have a relationship like that. And so she broke up with him. And then her husband just left her because... he was cheating. Well, she left him, actually. He was cheating on her, and Lightman knew it and didn't know what to do with the information, because he could tell every time the guy would come in, he was like, oh, I was late in the office doing blah, blah, blah. And Lightman would be like, he would know the dude was lying. And he didn't know what to do with that information. And technically, by their rules is they don't read each other.
Mm-hmm.
But by that rule, he shouldn't have done anything. But he couldn't help himself because he basically was seeing her hurt. So he kind of confronted the husband and made an issue of it. And then it got to the point where I think Foster probably knew he was cheating on her, but was choosing to ignore it. Was in denial and didn't want to deal with it. But because Lightman made it an issue, she had no choice. They got divorced. So now both of them divorced. And there's this tension, which of course is really good for a TV show. But
just don't consummate it too soon.
I don't think they are. But it makes it really interesting because their relationship is unique in that, like you saw on this episode in particular, he has a hard time reading her. Like, she lied to him way back in the day and he didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, you're a much better liar than you made me think. And she's like, when it's important. But what I did like about it is once he realized she was lying to him, he didn't know what she was lying to him about. But once he realized that she was lying to him about something, he was like, just tell me what it is. I don't care. And I forgive you. He's like, I forgive you ahead of time. No matter what it is, you're already forgiven. And she was just like, just drop it. And they go through the whole episode, and he keeps trying to get her to tell. And then finally, when she does, she's terrified that he's going to be mad. You know, and she tells him, and he just looks at her, and he just opens his arm and hugs her. He's like, you know, I already did the pre-forgiveness. We're good. So it's a good emotional show. It's moving. I love the fact that you learn stuff about reading people. I thought that the use of flashback was interesting, but it lacks something. I still want to know how they decided to start it. Because just the flashback that we saw, I don't understand how they both left their government positions and started their own company. Because based on the timeline, a year later, they're starting the company up together. And I didn't see in those flashbacks enough back history to understand why they would do that. Because investing in a company together, that's money, that's commitment. And, you know, they seemed like casual acquaintances at best.
So. Now, Mekhi Phifer was not in last week's episode.
No, he is. Whenever they deal with the FBI, he shows up. He was in the week before.
Oh, he's their contact there?
He's their FBI liaison.
Gotcha. Okay.
So whenever the cases get a little dangerous, or if they're dealing with a criminal, or he's probably in about half the episodes. He's been added to the cast officially, but he's not in every episode. It depends on how dangerous. And they added him because in first season, they started doing more dangerous episodes, and it didn't make sense
that they're just going out there by themselves.
Yeah, because Foster's character almost got raped on an episode because she got targeted. They were trying to find a serial rapist, and they basically put themselves on his radar, and he decided to go after Foster. And she almost got taken, and he was, Lightman was freaked out. And after that, he was like, look, it was like, I think it was like the next case. He's like, okay, we need security. We need somebody that has a gun when we need, and they're forever getting taken hostage. Some people, there was a really good episode called Honey, if you look it up, where some guy is sure he's telling the truth. He's got a warrant out for his arrest. Everybody thinks he killed his wife. And he takes Lightman hostage to get Lightman to prove that he didn't kill his wife. And that's a really good episode. It's really moving. It's really emotional. It's a really good scenes between Lightman and Foster. I thought it was good. And then Mekhi Phifer got to be the hero to stop the guy because they had somebody in the facility who had a gun who could stop a hostage situation. So that was pretty cool. Anyway, so thumbs up for the show. All right. The good guys.
Ooh.
You go, Parsh?
I loved it this week. I was laughing so much. I literally fell off the couch at the end of the episode. But
yeah, I mean, I think good guys. I know you already told me preamble that you have negatives, but let me get my positive. Let's get our positive vibe out first, which was this week's the crisis was the candy machine, yeah. The vending machine. And he's like, this is a gateway crime. Whoever did this crime, they're going to graduate to something way more serious. We got to stop them now.
It's the broken door theory.
Yeah. The broken window or the broken door?
Well, the actual theory is the broken window theory. So, of course.
He called it the
broken door theory.
Right.
The uneducated version.
Oh, yeah. And then he steals the watch from the crime scene because he's like, I'm going to make him come get the watch. Yeah. And I was like, what? Oh my god, and I love the fact that their cases start off as the smallest, stupidest things and then become something huge, or you had no idea where it was going. So I thought that was really creative. I think that Colin Hanks is doing, you know, he's doing the straight man act, but I like the fact that Bradley Whitford's first character is bringing, I gotta learn their names on the show, but he's bringing he's bringing him to the dark side of the force, you know? He's just like, every week, he doesn't see the clear image of the rules anymore. He's kind of like, all right, this is what my partner needs, okay. And then the flu, oh my god. He literally gave everyone in the entire police force the flu.
Yep.
That was great. Except for the one cop who actually got his flu shot.
Because he goes by the book.
Exactly. So, and then the criminal this week was hilarious. He's like, his entire motivation for getting his money is so he can get his tattoo removed.
Yes.
He's like, I got this when I was drunk. I gotta get this thing off of me, man. It was just like, just the dialogue is just really funny. And I really still have to hit the time flashbacks or forwards?
Flashbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they start off forward and then they flashback. Those are really cool.
Right, yeah.
No,
I really liked it. And one of the things that I did notice, sort of an inside joke, is that JP Manu, who played the hotel manager, he used to have this like running gag where he used to get typecast as a bellhop. So now he's like sort of been promoted, though murdered. But but yeah, he's graduated from bellhop to hotel manager.
That's an interesting promotion. I wonder if that includes a pay raise.
He was on ER for a while, too.
So he got out of the bellhop around there, but it used to be, even in Angel, he was the bellhop in that flashback episode.
I remember that, yeah. Nice. Okay, hit us, Mr. Negativity.
Hated it. I'd never watched this show before, and I probably won't be watching it again. They might be having fun, but I wasn't. I just thought it was predictable and silly and not really engaging.
It was silly. I will give you that. But it was silly fun.
Yeah.
Just, not my cup of tea. Just, you know, I like Colin Hanks. It's scary how much he's starting to, A, look like his dad and, B, sound like his dad. And I can see that Brad Whitford is having fun in the role, but I thought it was on the wrong side of the line they talk about in Spinal Tap between clever and stupid. And for me, it was on the stupid side, so. They've picked up a 13-episode order for season 2, though, and the ratings aren't great, so. I hope the giant brains at Fox know what they're doing.
Well, I think it's going to pick up momentum. One, there's not that much stuff to watch this summer, so people might start watching it. And two, I think it's fun. It's a fun show. It's not, as Peter always says, it's not Lost. You know.
Thank goodness.
But it's fun. It's enjoyable. It's one of those shows. It's kind of like when I watch Castle, I watch Castle because it's fun. It's a fun show. I enjoy it. It's not the most brilliant show. Some of the crimes are predictable, but I don't care because I enjoy spending time with these characters. And that's the same thing with Good Guys. It's not the most brilliant show. It's not about figuring out who done it, because a lot of times they show you who did it at the beginning of the episode. Right. So that's not the mystery. The mystery is going along for the ride with these guys to see
what the hell is Bradley Whitford going to do next.
Exactly. Because it's going to be outrageous, and it's great. And considering how old-fashioned and presumably homophobic he would be, because I'm from the 70s, then he grabs the guy and kisses him. I didn't see that coming at all.
Exactly.
And that's, I just thought that was hilarious.
That's the scene that ended me. I was like, I couldn't breathe.
Last scene of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. You went, all right, Mr. Blar. All right, so.
Mutant enemy.
The next show we're going to talk about is In Plain Sight.
Another show I had not seen before, but I really enjoyed it.
Excellent.
And I've always liked Mary McCormack ever since Murder One.
I don't think I watched Murder
Way
One.
Way back
I
in the day.
I remember Murder One, but I did not watch it.
She was one of the women on Murder One, but I've always liked her, and I will add this to my list of shows to watch.
Though next week is the finale, so you gotta go back.
Oh, dang, got it.
Or is there, I think there's two.
Is it two?
I think there's two left.
No, it was a good storyline. It was touching. Great cast, well done.
I like the usually when they are like, oh, we're going to transform this guy by shaving his beard, it's usually like, oh, okay, whatever. But I swear to God, it looked like two different actors.
Seriously. It's like, whoa, where'd that guy, oh my gosh, that's him. I wonder how they cast somebody like that. It's like, what do you look like with a beard? Can you grow a butt ugly beard and then be like a really...
And that beard looked real, too. Usually the fake beards look really fake. I have to give them credit. That beard didn't look fake. I'm pretty sure the actor did not get into the role enough to grow that out, but still, it looked real.
At least they had good beard hair people.
Yeah.
But Mary McCormack, I like her and her... I don't think in this episode you really didn't get to see her and Marshall interact that much. That's the best thing about the show. Is her and Marshall are fantastic together.
You did get a little bit of Marshall interacting with the genius homeless guy a little bit in the beginning.
Yeah.
But there wasn't too much of Marshall and his personality.
Mary and Marshall, when you put them in a room together, there are fireworks, there are bad jokes, there are possibly thrown food. They're like siblings. On a bad day, like, you know, siblings who are always poking each other, like, stop touching me, stop touching me. That's them.
Except for the fact that he's secretly in love with her.
It's not that big of a secret. Because she, I think she knows.
Gotta know. Women know.
She knows. She chooses to ignore it because...
Mary, though, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't argue usually, but Mary has a unique situation.
Except that the only way I would say... Because normally, Mary's big thing is she can't read people. She has no idea when guys like her. She really is like that.
She should team up with Tim Roth.
Yeah. I would agree with you, except for the fact... Then when she broke up with her boyfriend, she was very sensitive in telling Marshall about it. She was really careful about it, and she wasn't sure how he was going to be about it. So that tells me she has a clue, you know? Because he's not that secret with his love for Mary. But generally speaking, on an everyday basis, they're like siblings. And it is hilarity to watch them interact. And I really like Stan, too. But then they started adding all these other characters in The Office, so I'm not sure if I like that.
USA has been doing this thing within Plain Sight and also with Royal Pains. I guess they're two shows that maybe their viewing is not their, like, higher-rated shows. They're doing all this stunt casting with, like, Alice and Janney.
Oh, and Henry Winkler.
In Royal Pains, it's Henry Winkler and Marcia Gay Harden. And I don't know what to think about it.
Right. Well, Alice and Janney, I would be happy, except they had her on for like three episodes, and then she's disappeared, and they replaced her with a woman from some other show that I used to watch.
They replaced her.
Well,
recast the role.
They didn't really recast. It's a different character.
Different character,
but the same type reason for being there.
Same
oversight. Yeah.
Yeah, and so Alice and Janney was really entertaining because her and Mary McCormick interactions were very hostile.
It was wonderful.
Really cool to watch them interact. And then she's just gone, and then we have this other woman who's just like an accountant going, you haven't paid your bills. You need to write this off. And I'm like, okay, you're boring. Go away.
Interesting.
Yeah, no one
I don't really like that
the
at all.
Either. The
young guy?
Yeah, the one who had a bigger part this week.
Yeah, and he looks strangely like Stan's son. Like, they had a shot that was like across the both of their faces. I was like, they look related. But...
Yeah, I haven't bothered to learn their names. I really
I don't care about them either. And I mean, I like Stan, so bring Stan into the story. I like, there was a really good just Stan-only
episode
that was really great. He's a great character, but I don't like all these little people that they're bringing in because they're not really making them interesting. And, of course, they're taking time away from Marion Marshall, who is what I care about. I also, Brandy, I swear to God, I want to hit her with a brick.
She the blonde?
At least she didn't give the guy the money.
Yes.
She's Mary's sister?
Yes.
Okay.
And she has loser family. Her entire family are complete losers. And her mom got herself together. She got off alcohol and whatever else she was using, went to rehab, and now her mom's kind of together and went somewhere. I can't remember where her mom went.
She moved out because she got a job finally.
Right, because her mom has never had a job. Because she's always drunk. Hmm. But now that she's actually becoming a contributing member of society, she's moved out. Her sister's still a loser, but trying to not be a loser. And then gets all upset when people tell her she has a stupid idea. Because her sister's stupid.
Because she's dating a really rich guy. Somehow she managed to meet this really rich guy. And then she went off and did something stupid again.
Also, the really rich guy is the guy from Bailey from West Wing. Remember Bailey? Yeah. Will Bailey? It's that guy.
And he was Jeremy on Sports Night.
Right. So he's her new boyfriend, which seems like an odd pairing, except until you say, oh, he's a millionaire. And you're like, oh, okay. and she claims, she's like, oh, I didn't know he was a millionaire. And what she says
sure
is true,
did.
Except that there's no way that she would really, I don't see her dating him if he wasn't a millionaire. Except that Brandy generally is stupid, so whatever.
The relationship started, though, because he found out she was lying to him, and then she got all apologetic and,
She didn't know he was a millionaire
so
when they first met, but it just seems weird. But anyway, I hate talking about her family. So the case this week was the guy, I don't even remember what he was testifying against or for.
He found the bomb.
He found the bomb. But that wasn't even the interesting part. The interesting part, of course,
his
father
family.
And his family and his mother. His father and his mother, like, he ran away from his foster family when he was 15 because he felt like he didn't belong. And then... however many years later, he actually finds his real family. I thought that was kind of interesting. And he found a place where he fit in. So, and I liked his arc, because what didn't make any sense to me when they're telling him he could never see his father again. I was like, why not? First of all, nobody knows that's his father. Right. You know, so it didn't make sense to me that they would tell him that you can only see your father this one time.
Now, did they put the father in witness?
No, they didn't have to.
Because he didn't have a past to begin with.
Right, they had no past.
No paper trail.
Exactly. No one knew that that was his father. There was, and I do like the irony is when they gave him his new name, they made his new name the same last name as his father's name. So he actually now has kind of his real name. So that actually makes a lot of sense, and I don't see why they didn't think of that in the first place. I actually thought that that was, because my thing is, if I had been in the situation of that guy, I'd have been like, why can't I see my father again? You know, well, their solution at the end was what I would have suggested, like, right. 10 minutes earlier.
But then you wouldn't have had an act four.
Right, but it just, that felt a little false. Forced. Yeah, so, but I still liked it. I liked the guy playing the father. It would have been nice if they actually looked a little alike. He was like, oh, you look just like your mother. Obviously, because he looks nothing like you.
Well, they had to have the Mary figure it out reveal. Like, it had to be, like, sort of not obvious.
Right,
if he looked like him, then she would have watched it and been like, oh,
bum, bum, bum.
You're dead.
That's true. But, I mean, just, and then I like the fact that they had a really good conversation before they even knew who they, you know, who they were or whatever. And I thought that was moving. So, yeah, that was a good moving episode. Mary actually got to be a good person, which doesn't always happen.
Exactly.
Moving on to Burn Notice.
I'm not sure how I feel about the new guy.
Me too.
It's like, I guess they can't have a baby or get a dog, so we get a new guy. We get a new guy, wow. And I'm like,
wow, he is the tin dog.
Yeah, I just don't know how I feel about that. Especially, I love what they've done. I love bringing Sharon Gless. Mm-hmm. To the forefront of the action.
I was
she's
just going to say, I love how bringing in the new guy showed that she's more aware of what's going on when she figured it all out.
Bingo.
I like what that did for her. I just don't know what I think of him.
Yeah, I don't.
I like him. I think he is, he brings a different perspective to the whole thing. I mean, because we're what?
Season four.
The first three seasons, we've seen that the three of them work like a well-oiled machine, all right? What happens if you put a little cog in there? You know, because now you have a guy that doesn't follow Michael's orders exactly. He doesn't trust the group exactly. He trusts himself, and that's it. And it makes sense. As a spy, he has no back history with these guys. It doesn't make sense that he would follow them, you know, without thought. So I think that's kind of interesting. And I want to see his trust in the group kind of grow and have the, that it gives, it allows conflict, basically.
I'm not disliking him. I just, I'm still, and he's new. I'm still feeling it out a little bit, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
I just don't, it feels like another obstacle in the step of the natural progression of Michael figuring out who burned him. And, oh, we can't do that too soon because then.
Well, don't we already know?
Well, Fraser's dad burned him.
Right. Well,
we don't know, but he worked for someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we don't even know the group that he's searching for now is the same group. It's like a totally different. I don't feel like he's necessarily even looking for who burned him anymore.
I think the group that he's looking for now is actually someone who's against the group that burned him.
I'm kind of confused.
They
broke out Simon.
It seems like the mythology of the series is starting to get needlessly complex. That's I think my objection. And you add the new guy and the fact that Michael is the new Michael's new best friend or the black dude.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Vaughn.
Yeah.
It seems like the whole thing, Vaughn manipulates Michael into burning the new guy.
Right.
For purposes we don't yet know, so it just seems like the mythology is getting needlessly complex.
Well, my thing is, I don't watch the show for the mythology because I don't really care who burned Michael, and it's to the point where I don't think it matters. It's more about what's his motivation, how does each week he helps a different group in a different way.
It's the equalizer.
Yeah, and that's what the show is about. It's not really about who the heck burned him because, well, even if he does find who burned him, he's not like he's going to get his job back. So who cares? I don't particularly care one way or the other. And right now, it's all about, you know, helping Jesse out, maybe helping him get his job back, which is probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
Unless the audience don't like him, and then all of a sudden he'll get his job back and be gone.
Or we have that showdown and Michael has to take him out.
That would suck.
Yeah, it would.
I
don't know. It's just, boy, the Sharon Gless speech at the end when she's talking to Michael, I swear, something gives me an idea that there's something going on with Michael's dad we haven't been privy to.
Somebody asked that at Comic-Con, though, and Matt Nix was like, no, it never even occurred to me that, like, if you have a mystery dad somewhere, like an absent father, that everyone in the world is going to be like, Michael's dad burned him! And he's like, no.
Not that he burned him, but it just seems that there's something there.
I don't think he's a mystery dad. He's more of a deadbeat dad.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think he...
Father, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really think... He wasn't absent. That was the problem. He was always there.
Absent in the show.
Absent from the show.
Yeah.
But it just seems there's something there that we're going to see again.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to have anything to do with his burn notice.
Oh, I don't think it's going to have anything to do with his burn notice either, but it just seems there's something
I actually
there.
Like the brother. I kind of want the brother to come back without the... Didn't he get married or something? I don't like whoever he got married to.
He started a limo business or something.
Yeah.
No, but he went off with some woman.
Oh, my God.
I think he got married to her, and I just don't like her. I just want the brother to come back.
They can just say it didn't work out, or she's with her parents, or
well,
I'm in Boca.
Aren't they in Vegas or something? So
yeah,
you can probably just get divorced.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like the brother, though. I thought that was a good addition, and that gave a good backstory. But yeah, I like Jesse. Jesse is cool. I mean, I think they're trying to add some tension with Jesse and Fee, which I don't particularly care one way or the other, because this is one of the few shows where there's a relationship between the main characters that I don't care about. Like,
Between Michael and Fee?
I could care less. If they're together, okay. If they're not together, okay.
Which is interesting, because last year they seemed to really be kind of pushing that relationship.
Right. But it's just, there's something about their relationship, because they're so off and on, it feels like there's no stakes, because they've already been together, they've already broken up, they're together, they break up, they're together, they break up. It doesn't matter if they get together, because they'll just break up and get back together again, so who cares? So there's that's the thing about, because of the way they did that relationship, there's no tension with that relationship. The only thing that I think that if Fee gets with Jesse, then you'll have Michael-Jesse conflict, because I think Michael would have an issue with Jesse sleeping with Fee. But that's about all you got.
The other issue you get is just you just don't know if they're off or if they're on this week. So it's kind of an interesting,
yeah,
like,
what
are they going to be today?
What part of the season it is? Is it? It's episode 404?
So they must be together.
Yeah.
But I do like, oh my goodness. Bruce Campbell, I just blanked on his character.
I want a Sam.
Sam, thank you, Sam.
I want a Sam-centric storyline.
Well, this week's actually was kind of, because that's what I was going to say. I really liked the look on his face when Jesse, like, told his real backstory to that criminal. He was like, are you freaking kidding me? He's like, that's real. We're doing, you know, personas.
Chuck Finley.
Yeah, he's like, I'm
We're
Chuck Finley.
We're doing bits.
Right. He's like, I'm doing Chuck Finley. You're giving this guy my real history? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He got so angry about that, and I thought that was really interesting. Because, first of all, if he had given that guy his real name or any real information, if that guy ever got out of the hospital, he'd be looking for him. So why would you tell that dude any of your real personal history? Which is what he was trying to tell Jesse. Jesse was totally screwing that up. Mainly because Jesse doesn't do bits. You know, he's used to doing, you know, sneaking under fences.
Straight
and,
arrow.
Yeah, he's used to doing the whole actual military maneuver. He's not used to pretending to be somebody. So he kind of sucks at it. Which is interesting, because I want to see episodes where we could see that. But I really liked Sam's reaction to that guy. And he's like, God, I have a psychopath as my new best friend. And I liked how they hired all those muscle guys to just, you know, be... I'm like, what did they tell them in casting? No, they weren't actors. They were real security people.
Yeah, they just hired security for the day.
Right. So I thought that was really kind of interesting. And when they left that guy at the end and he was totally screwed, I was like, well, he's screwed, but he's got the bigger gun.
Yeah. They did say that he ended up killing the
guy. He ended up killing the guy because he had a freaking machine gun and they all had little pistols. But he got shot, but he still killed everybody. So I was like, yeah, they left him screwed, but they left him well-armed. So if you're going to screw me, at least give me a machine gun. I thought that was a good change. And so yeah, we're only on episode 2 of the season, so we have no idea exactly where the season's going other than a big showdown between the guys at the end.
I thought that was episode 3.
No, it's 2, right? The first one, because this was the first one.
The first week of the month, so.
No, this is the third one. You're right. Because the first one, they hadn't met Jesse yet.
His name was in the credits. I'm like, who's this dude?
They hadn't met Jesse yet. And in the second episode, they break him out of whatever they break him out of. And this was their first case together.
Right.
Okay, so this is the third episode. All right. Okay, let's move on to Doctor Who. Mr. Negativity?
Oh, yeah, like you're that much better on that. No, I've been disappointed in the last batch of episodes on Doctor Who. I like Matt Smith. Amy Pond is starting to grow on me. But, Lord, if she gets captured one more time, I'm going to scream.
Isn't that the job of the companion to be captured?
No, Martha didn't get captured that much, did she?
Actually, Martha almost never got... She got captured one... times, maybe. She didn't catch. You're right. Martha Jones was made of awesome and rarely got captured.
Amy is like that's her.
She is danger friendly.
She's the girl hostage.
Yeah, but to be fair, this week's episode, which was called Cold Blood, this week's episode, she got captured at the end of like last episode. And as soon as we see her captured, she immediately got herself out. So she didn't require...
And then immediately gets captured again.
Oh, yeah. She did do that. I was like, she broke out in 5 minutes. And then she's captured again. But I mean, I don't like it when it forces the doctor to come rescue you. But I have to say, she does get captured. She gets herself out. I will give her that credit. However, she walks so blindly into danger that I want to put a leash on her. I mean, I swear to God, she like, this week's episode, they're like, how are we going to get out of here? She goes, I don't know, let's push this button. I'm like, no, that doesn't sound like a good idea.
Pushing buttons, woman.
And she almost like, she was crazy with the button pushing to the point where I'm like, if you don't know what you're doing and there are frozen soldiers on the other side of that door, let's not push that button. You know, so... Yeah, she was a little crazy with the button pushing. And then when she has the gun, she doesn't fire it. So, and immediately gets captured. So, yeah, that was bad.
Which is funny because the, you know, the mom sure didn't have a problem using the gun.
She was... What's weird about the mom in this story is they were very specifically trying to give us a sympathetic face to her doing something...
reprehensible.
Exactly. So they were trying to give you a reason to understand why she did it. The problem with that is it didn't work. Mm-mm. Because I get intellectually why she did it, but there's no excuse for tasing someone to death. You know, who is a prisoner and chained up? I don't...
Especially when they're goading you to start a war.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, are you stupid?
It felt more like a plot contrivance than...
Exactly.
An earned moment.
Exactly. I didn't buy her tears and oh my God, she was telling me what they were going to do to my son, so I had to tase her. And then she talked to my dad, so I had to tase her again. And then she talked about my husband, I had to tase her again. I'm like, really? No. She's like, well, I thought she'd break because I would break. I was like, that's because you're stupid. Like, there was nothing about her character that was really redeemable. And the doctor at the end was like, oh, you can teach your son to be better than you. And I'm like, you shouldn't be teaching your son anything. I was like, yeah, let the dad do that. You kind of suck at it. Then she got her father almost killed because she's like, come on, Dad. It'll be a great idea if we send this... She was just a really bad...
Yeah, but the dad was stupid to go along with it.
Yes, because technically he's the father, so he should be smarter than her and not be influenced. But I didn't blame him as much as I blamed her, mainly because it was her idea and it didn't even occur to him to do something like that. So, boo on both of them, really. So, I
didn't like what they did with the Rory thing. I thought it was a big cop-out / cheat.
Oh, by erasing him from all of time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a friend who doesn't like Rory who was very happy about that. But I actually didn't like it myself because it made it... Now it has like a weird false tension between the doctor mm-hmm. and Amy because he knows something that she doesn't know. And he's afraid to tell her. And, okay, let me... My big plot hole that's in this episode is that the doctor sticks his hand into the crack. And then the light from the crack touches Rory and erases him from time. Okay, how does that happen? How does that work?
I think a better choice would have been to have Amy mad at the doctor for getting her fiancé killed.
Actually, that's not a bad... And why did Rory jump in front of the gun? Really? Because he doesn't even like the doctor.
Because the script said to.
I mean, Rory doesn't like the doctor. He wants Amy to come back with him.
Well, I think Rory doesn't like the doctor because he knows the doctor's freaking dangerous and puts Amy in danger.
Right. So I could buy Rory jumping in front of Amy. I don't buy Rory jumping in front of the doctor.
Nope.
And so then he gets shot. The doctor stuck his arm in the crack where there's all the light. Nothing happens to him. The light spills out of the crack, touches Rory, he's erased from time. There's no, they gave no explanation of, oh, Time Lords are immune to the time. No, they didn't say anything like that. So, what? Yet, the light blows up the TARDIS, because now we got a piece of, like, actually, that was kind of cool. Like, I did like the fact that the debris he pulled out of the crack was a piece of the TARDIS. So you're like, all right, what happened to blow up the TARDIS?
We'll probably find out in the finale.
Yeah. So
that's my guess.
I'm sure that's where we're headed. But I go ahead.
I think they've overdone the crack thing. Yes. I mean, when they did Bad Wolf, was that season one or was
it? Yes, that was season one.
When they did Bad Wolf season one, it was a puzzle and it was stretched out over several episodes, not every single episode. I think we've seen that crack every single.
I think we don't see it. No, you're right. So far we've seen it.
Except for in the two-parters, we only saw it in the second half. Ooh.
And it was a big part of the second half, too.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say with Bad Wolf, what was great about that is you didn't realize you were seeing Bad Wolf until the doctor goes, hey, haven't we seen that word a couple of times?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, yeah, maybe we have. What does that mean? And in season three, they had Saxon posters everywhere. They had Saxon posters on Torchwood. At the end of Torchwood, there were Saxon posters on the episode Captain Jack Harkness.
I had no idea.
And then in the end of season two, which was the Christmas special with Donna, they give an order, like Saxon gives the order to shoot out the star or whatever. And then in season three, at the end of the episode, when Martha's about to get onto the TARDIS, there's Vote Saxon posters plastered all behind her head. That's what I call subtle. Because when you're watching the episode, you don't know who Saxon is. You don't know what the heck Vote Saxon means. You don't find out who the heck Saxon is until the finale of season three. So to me, that's subtle. That's great. It builds up. And when you watch it the second time, you're like, oh, this is awesome. So
I think my chief concern is that, I can't think of the new head writer's name.
Stephen Moffat.
I don't know if he's up to the task. His episodes seem to be okay, but the other ones seem to be not so much. And it just seems there have been too many clunkers in a row now.
Well, what you consider a clunker, I consider to be somewhat okay. Like, I think we had a disagreement about the Weeping Angels episode, which I thought were fantastic.
I thought they, like with the Borg, the more you show the Borg, the more you ruin the Borg. With the Weeping Angel two-parter, it kind of defanged them to a certain point.
That is true. I mean, in the first part of it, they were freaking scary. But by the time you got to the second part, and then they were getting wiped out of time, they were doing weird stuff, and then it's like, no, you have to keep your eyes open. You know, you got to keep your eyes closed or something, and they reversed all the rules. At that point, it got a little confusing and a little weird. But what saved the day was River Song. You know,
oh, I love me some Alex Kingston.
So. River Song rocks my socks. So it's like any episode that's got her in it is fantastic.
Is she coming back this season?
Yes.
Awesome.
So I'm excited. Her story, and they've made her more mysterious. You're talking about using somebody more takes their fangs, but the more they use River Song, the more interesting she's becoming.
Okay, so is it my imagination, or did they kind of imply that the person she's responsible for killing is the doctor?
That is not your imagination. Okay. But the question is, we've already seen the end of her story, which is weird, because we've seen how she dies, right? So
that's right.
Right. So we've already seen the end of her story because we're watching her story out of sequence, which is really, it was time travel, makes your head hurt. But
yeah, it does.
Because of that, it makes you understand that how much she cares about the doctor. So my question is, if she is responsible for killing the doctor in the future, what would make her have to do that? There's no way she's just going to just kill him. Hmm. You know that she loves him. So there's something.
And she marries him at some point.
We're assuming, though I think it's a fairly decent assumption, that they do get married. They're doing the whole time traveler's wife story. So we're watching their marriage out of order and out of sequence, to where the first time she meets him, she's already been married to him for years. He's never met her before in his life. So he's like, who the heck are you? And so you get that heartbreak when she realizes he doesn't know who she is. Now, the thing that's interesting is now the next time we've seen her, we're not sure where she is in their timeline. She obviously cares about him, and she obviously knows that he will do anything for her, but we're not sure, you know. And so that's interesting.
Huh.
And I like it. I really do. And she has a kind of a Jack Harkness to her.
I was
going to
say, she's kind of like a female Jack Harkness, in the point that the mysterious person who pops up to spice things up.
Right. And she's from, and what's convenient is they made them from the exact same time period. So they're both from the 51st century. So I'm like, man, I gotta go visit that time. That's pretty cool, you know? Alright, so Doctor Who, done. Let's anybody got any final comments, any thoughts?
This new show with Jason Lee comes on next week, Memphis Heat on TNT.
I haven't even heard about it.
Yeah.
That's weird.
He was on Regis and Kelly hawking it.
When is the vampire show that's going to be on, like, CBS?
Oh,
or
ABC.
ABC.
The Gates.
When does that start?
I should know.
Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, is this Sunday?
This Sunday.
Set your VCR. Oh, VCR. What am I talking? Set your TiVos. Thank you.
Your DVRs.
Your DVRs. Any final thoughts?
I'm excited for all the rest of the upcoming USA and
White Collar, baby.
White Collar.
Psych.
White Collar and Psych are my shows.
I'm going to watch the new one. Just, I'll give it a shot.
Is it my imagination, or was the episode with John Cena, like, did that seem like a backdoor pilot? Juliet's brother?
I don't think so.
It kind of felt like a little bit like a backdoor pilot.
Because USA has all the wrestling guys. They just seemed to...
Oh,
yeah.
That what it was?
Yeah, that was
it's
what
like
it was.
Because
they have... Yeah.
They had on Royal Pains, too. They just had wrestler.
Hey, you know, the Dwayne Johnson's first acting gig was on Star Trek Voyager, and look at him now.
Are you serious?
You didn't know that? Oh, yeah.
I had stopped watching the show at that point. But anyway, all right, let's wrap up the podcast, and I'd like to thank you guys for coming out and... doing the podcast with me. And if you guys have any feedback, remember you can send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. And I will talk to you next week.